Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Good morning, good evening, good night, NBN Entrepreneurship and Leadership.
Personally, I'm fascinated by the story.
Trust is an underrated weapon in the business landscape.
I'm a really, really strong believer in learning by doing.
What's the definition of success?
You're trying to come up with an answer to the question. But go ahead, Richard.
You could be right, but you're wrong. Good afternoon, good morning, good night, Entrepreneurship and Leadership Channel listeners on the NBN. I'm here with my co-host, Kimo Fontekidis, and our guest, Denis Zadanov, if I pronounce your name correctly. Denis, is that correct?
Almost got it right. Almost. Yes.
And I met Denis at the TED conference a few weeks ago in Vancouver, but rather than me trying to, other than the fact that I know he's a highly accomplished entrepreneur, I'd like you, Denis, to introduce yourself in 30 seconds or a minute, just in the way you would to a stranger you meet at a party or at a business event.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I'm born and raised in Ukraine, and I left Ukraine at the age of 20 to study in the UK. But at the age of 19, I joined my brother and his friends who just started a company around building apps for iOS, for Apple devices. And ever since, we've built a business around building great productivity apps on for iPhone, iPad, and Mac. And this year we'll hit an amazing milestone of about 200 million users using our products. I hope many of you have used our products, such as Scanner Pro or Spark Email or PDF Expert or Documents and Calendars. So think of us as a company who are building amazing, easy to use, and accessible technology product that help people just be a little bit more efficient and effective and save time while using Apple devices. So that's what we've been doing for the past 14 years, I assume.
Which I guess makes you about 33, 34 years old at the moment, is that right?
I am 33, yes, already. And one interesting fact, when you think about our story, when we reflect about our story, we think that we've never raised capital. So we've almost done things against the odds. That was kind of weird combination of us being independent and bootstrapped, yet profitable. And we managed to build business around building great products on the App Store.
Hmm. Well, Kimon and I very much appreciate the sort of the bootstrapper, do-it-yourself approach rather than the sort of pitching and burning through other people's money. But congratulations. In terms of like financial numbers, can you give a sense of what other people think your businesses might be worth, or whether you're a billionaire, a unicorn, giant?
I am not. So, and that bugs me a lot. So I'm still working and a lot. And as I mentioned, I want to focus right now and getting more output and productivity. But we don't have the public numbers. And then being a private company, we don't disclose our numbers. There was no kind of evaluation event, or there was no any round or acquisition, obviously. There is no evaluation, but I don't think we're not a unicorn. Let's put it this way.
Okay.
So a lot of work to do.
have a question about we're obviously going to get back into your history and understand how you actually got into this. But like the first thing that came to my mind when you were talking about this was like, you're basically part of this Apple development community infrastructure. And there has been, you know, obviously in the news you read about, you know, is that an issue? Is that an issue to your business model at all? Like that somehow Apple takes like an unfair share of, because I guess you make all your money through the App Store. And I'm not sure how whether it's like you have purchases or in-app purchases and stuff like that, or like, you know, premium versions and stuff like that. But is the Apple development community or the app community in general, does that concern you at all? I mean, in any way, in terms of like a risk to your business model or something like that, because you're kind of dependent on them.
Yeah, since we've been on the App Store, literally since day, I think one or two, right? Our first app, Riddle Docs, was launched in 2008 during the whole App Store revolution and the App Store came about to be. And for us, it was incredible distribution engine. Suddenly, a small group of young 20 something years old students, right? Like created an app, and that app has become available in 180 countries all over the world, just being one click away from a user. So I can appreciate, and I do appreciate all the heavy lifting of distribution that Apple has done with the App Store. And then of course, that's been 14 years ago. Right now, there is this notion, and I've been, of course, following this closely. I think Apple has introduced a lot of things that make it easier for developers. For example, if we have subscription, and now we're finalizing our transition to subscription products and apps, for the second year of the subscription, if the user renews the subscription, Apple will charge not 30, but 15% for the app developers. And then they've introduced programs, for example, for smaller size developers who make below 1 million a year in revenue. I think they charge them way less. I don't remember the exact number. If you ask me as an entrepreneur, would I love not to pay 30% tax on what are we make, like all the revenues we're making? Yeah, that's a substantial number for us. So I think the industry will self-regulate. What I dislike about this whole notion and what I'm seeing a lot of bad players tricking people into buying subscriptions without people knowing. And there's a lot of fraud. So what Apple brings the kind of security and trust towards the platform, right? And now if you will see all these different apps will be trying to charge people like not in the App Store, but in other ways, we might see a lot of bad actors. So somehow the industries have to balance, and I'm very hopeful that it will. So I think it's a process, and we will see some changes in the next couple of years for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. But so basically 30% is a distribution fee. And that makes sense. Like, yeah. Would you pay 30% to get Apple's distribution fee and then 15 if it's successful?
I think it will. I think with time, it will go down. That's just my prediction. But I like the idea of having a secure, trusted place where I can just go and buy some products that are high quality, that I know are not scam, and that there is value in that. And for us developers, that kind of distribution across all the different platforms and countries. And we localized our products into 9 major languages. That makes our reach even bigger. Right. And then the App Store editorial, they work with developers to kind of to highlight the stories behind products, the use cases for users. And they also try to tailor the recommendation engine on the App Store. So I think a lot of being done. As I said, I'd love to pay less and make more revenue, but we'll see.
But I think there's a point for people listening that, you know, for a new kids on the block, if you're a new company with an idea, this is an opportunity. It's really for the big established guys, the big games companies where their revenues are in the hundreds of millions. For them, that 30% is a lot, and maybe they've already established a brand and a presence. But for new guys who come along, of course, getting attention within the app store is difficult, but these big distribution platforms are more of an opportunity than a threat for new kids, because you can get the word out about the fact you exist to a global, or rather you get access to a global market. But anyway,
also,
I mean,
yeah, it's sorry. Also interesting, like Apple takes care of all the processing, payment processing and tax, sure. and so on. So I'm sure you guys know, and how, for example, if you want to sell something online, you know how to think, how to set up my payments, my Stripe, my VAT.
Yeah, all that stuff is taken
care of. And all the accounting, right? Like how you could create accounts and backend. And that's a lot of work.
It's
so
value.
If you're a small startup building product, you want to be building products, not doing the boring stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So let's jump back. You went to the UK when you were, I think you said 19 or 20 or something like that. But if you go back a bit earlier to your teenage years in the Ukraine, did you imagine that you were going to be an entrepreneur? Did you have role models in your family, or were your parents, were they surprised when you went into business? What was the context of your childhood and your inspirations?
I think nobody was surprised, and I clearly had a role model. His name was Dave Ogilvy. I really wanted to run a marketing agency. I loved marketing since a very young age, and that was a role model. But then and even when I did my master's, I picked kind of business and marketing, and then with heavy focus on marketing. And I just loved all the things around marketing, especially the aspects of kind of thinking what the world needs and how do we create a story to educate the world. I much prefer the word educate rather than sell. Educating people, It has more empathy, it's more human, and you understand what people might need. And then here you are, came out with this product that people just want to pay for. That's out of how they vote. So when I was doing my master's, Riddle was already, I think, 1 or 2 years old. So I told I'll tell the guys, hey, like I really want to help. I love marketing, and you can use some help. And that was just very natural. And I was kind of working at nights, part-time, and helping our company, and then studying during the day. And that was a beautiful mix of how my passion towards marketing and my education there became very important and valuable in our company very early on, because the majority four founders at Riddle, two of them were technical. Igor is my brother, who's a CEO. He is kind of all encompassing around the business, and then the Alex is a product guy. So me coming up with a marketing perspective and being naturally I believe a good communicator, and it's easy for me to make friends with people and tell stories and tell what we're doing. It was a very natural fit. So somehow, like all the roles that were needed very early on were filled almost organically with our strengths and we balanced our strengths and weaknesses, and there was synergy very early on.
I'm curious. I'm naive when it comes to, I never developed an app for the app store. So I don't know. Actually, I've never sold anything via the app store. So I don't know anything. I mean, I'm obviously a user. I'm an Apple user. I buy via the app store. But so I'm just trying to imagine, what is marketing? Like, if your main distribution channel is the app store, what is the, I feel like I'm asking a really stupid and obvious question, but like, what's the role of marketing?
That's an amazing question. Right?
Like, I think at the beginning, you were saying, well, the Apple editorial, they help position us. They help show us what the story is. What's the role of marketing when you're like, your main distribution channel is the app store?
So that's a very good question, right? And my role in the company was historically, it's what's called VP of marketing, think of CMO. We don't have And right now, I stepped down a year and a half ago from my executive role, and now I'm on the board. I think I forgot to mention this. So okay. Now I'm not operationally involved, even though I do help right now with a lot of things. But when you think about marketing, I think marketing starts with day zero, understanding what the world needs, understanding what is the timing, what's the trend out there, what are people willing to pay for. And you know, that there's like nothing changed if we like even go to older books and classics by Kotler and other things, they describe what marketing is. So marketing starts on day zero when you try to understand what kind of product the world would need and what do people want to buy, right? But when it comes to marketing apps, I see like at least three distinctive periods starting in 2008, 2017, and now. So we can briefly go through all of them and to give kind of an idea of how times have changed. So anyways, very early on, marketing was very easy, and we think ourselves as a product-led company. So a good product that works, that does the job, is the best marketing tool. And people get it, they use it, they say, hey, that's an amazing app, right? Like, for example, somebody used PDF Expert to sign a document or change the text or dates in their documents, and they loved it, and it works, and it's simple and intuitive, and they recommend their friends. So with PDF Expert, that's our flagship product, up to 30% of all the new users are coming from the friend's recommendation. So that's very high. So I was kind of in a lucky position to be that we have good products, and marketing good products is so much easier. So back in the day, there was like some limited channels, but okay, what worked? Apple editorial did work. But before they noticed us, we needed to get some amazing products and also get some press. So press back in the day, I'd say from 2008 to 2014, did work amazingly well to drive downloads, to drive attention, and people actually go and get the app. Not anymore. Just kind of a spoiler, not anymore. So back in the day, apps and iPhones and App Store were kind of a new shiny thing, and people loved exploring, right? And then the market had saturated in 2000, I'd say 14, 15, 16, and kind of getting that a person to get the one extra app was super hard. So anyways, first era, that was very kind of product-led marketing, great products, clear positioning, clear communication, what the product does, who is it for, and why it's amazing or why it's different, right? So three things, you make those clear, you show a product, it's easy to understand, it's easy to use, and people just get it and recommend their friends. Press did really did well, and that's why I spent half of my time trying to get a word out about us, and especially given that we were like a tiny little startup from Odessa, which is on the Black Sea of Ukraine.
Yeah.
And we'll have to compete with all the bigger guys and bigger companies and who raised huge venture rounds. Or if you notice our portfolio, we in many of those categories have very strong like platform leaders. Think of like Spark Email, right? We're competing with all the guys like Gmail, there's Apple Mail, there's Outlook, or you think about even PDF Expert. PDF is owned by Adobe. So press worked really well there. And then there was another period when what I witnessed that press didn't work that well to drive downloads. People, I think, had enough of apps. But what did work well with press is that from 2016 onwards, that would actually get you more eyeballs and people would know about your product and your company. So it made it easier to hire amazing people and also raise capital.
Well, we didn't raise press. I mean, you mean getting some kind of a review? Like when I think about how I buy apps, like I'll Google best something, and then I'll get to TechCrunch or somewhere like that, and it'll give me a top 10 list of the best apps. Like, so are you trying to get yourself on those lists? When you say press,
we were okay. on all of those lists. We were reviewed by even New York Times, say, they had this article saying probably the best way to scan your documents. That was our Scanner Pro right there as being kind of the best one. And there was a whole era, the movement of people like geeking around different products and different podcasts and media and those articles. Hey, these are like 10 best apps, or that's the best app to for students, or that's the best app to edit your PDF files, or that's the best email app. So I knew all these people throughout the years, and they loved our products. And getting on all these lists, I think early on helped us a lot, and even helping now to drive this amazing amount of people organically, like figuring out what they want and finding us online. So kind of we established a very strong presence. Later on, I think SEO, search optimization, I did focus on that for a year or two for PDF experts, and it did work really well. So for example, if you Google right now on your Mac, edit PDF on Mac, would be number one on.
So you have landing pages and then get it at the app store and basically.
Yeah. It's very like we have I'd say very basic stuff, but of course they are optimized and SEO, we can talk about SEO for a long, long time. So that was a channel. But interestingly enough, I don't know if I mentioned almost all of those downloads that I said, we have about 190 million this year. We'll have 200 million this year. We have 190 now and have 200 million this year. Majority of them are organic. So we didn't do enough of paid marketing. And there was a very good reason for that. And that's an opportunity, even though we're kind of late. So now we're coming to an interesting phase where, like, I'd say 2017 to 2020, 21. I think this was a golden era of this for any entrepreneur who wants to sell stuff online. The rise of Shopify, Instagram ads, Facebook ads. All you had to do is just to create a good landing page, put a product there, and then figure out how to run ads efficiently, right? So many people, there was an evolution of the App Store as well. Many people switch their apps to subscription, and that dramatically increases the lifetime value of these products and how much companies and developers are getting paid by the users. And we did not do that right away because for us, it felt not fair to the user. Think about this, right? You've been buying Scanner Pro, which is like a premium product, for $7 one-time purchase, right? And then what many people have done, they just said, okay, we'll now charge people for we'll charge them $3 per month for the same products just because they could. And that's where the whole industry shifted, and we didn't follow because we thought it's just not fair. We cannot sell the same value to the user and then charge them 10 times more. So, and also
you couldn't grandfather in the ones that already paid the $7 and then with new ones.
We could. It's just we thought, okay, we have to create something of a much bigger value that is
it's worth the $36 basically.
Exactly. And then right? And then we think of this way. If you want to charge a customer a recurring fee, you have to provide a recurring value, right? So it's about the nature of the product, the usage of the product. So it took us a couple of years for all the product teams to upgrade and deliver way more value. And only after that, we switched to subscription, which was already too late, to be honest. I'm talking about just success, but also some kind of
good
failures, right? But that's a missed opportunity because I know some numbers for similar companies who just copied our products and just marketed the heck of it using social and Instagram and Facebook ads, charging sometimes ridiculous prices, just like $3.99 per week, for example, for a Scanner app, right? And buying fake reviews. that's not who we are. That's not what we do. And that's not the right way of doing things. That's our like firm beliefs. But those guys made a lot of money. So I think that was it was a good era for anybody, the entrepreneurs who can build products that are good enough, and selling them was so much easier. So the main channel, like for apps, from what we've seen, was mainly paid media and performance marketing. And then there is now, when I think you guys, I don't know if you follow the whole beef of Facebook and Apple, when Apple they shut down the big part of analytics. So right now it's not as easy and profitable to market apps. So I see a lot of people actually kind of canceling their performance marketing or just lowering the budgets in a big way, because it's hard to see the results and understand the ROI of that. And I think right now the industry will pivot into something else as well, with big impact on social in terms of the I think of the next phase of marketing would be mostly personal recommendations and people that you trust. And I'm not talking about just influencers, like big guys with 15 million subscribers. I'm talking about hundreds and thousands of, we call them micro influencers, who have much, much better connection, who are way more relatable to somebody, right? You almost know them.
What's your definition of a micro? I'm just, exactly, I'm kind of curious in this. Yeah. Like, how many people do they need to have to call them a micro influencer?
I think I don't know the exact number, but
10K?
10K to 100K would be a micro influencer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there will be something around that. And I've seen some crazy stories on TikTok on how my friend's company, they do some beauty products. And this like random person that they had no idea of, like filled a TikTok video that became viral. So they sold out all their stock. And they were like out of stock for 2 months because of one video, and then he sold the company. So
good timing, yeah, exactly. Make it rich.
So we're seeing a lot of new stuff coming, and it's beautiful. It's even more noisy and competitive, though. So that's why I think we're coming kind of back to the very basis of marketing, understanding what is your unique value proposition. Why the people would need this.
So tell us a little bit about, I don't want to, like, Richard, I'm sure you have some things you want to ask, but I am very actually interested in this. The micro-influencer strategy, can you just talk a little bit about, so like, how do you do it?
I mean, honest, I don't know. we've missed the whole 4 to 5 years of this performance marketing.
Yeah.
Oh, because of the reasons that I told you, we couldn't ramp up the prices and sell what we had. So micro influencers, the way I think is that make a product that has, if you think about TikTok, are you familiar with this term that's called product market fit?
Yes.
Yeah. So when you think about TikTok, think about the term product visual fit. So TikTok
is a
very visual platform,
right?
And that's you might think of, okay, that might actually affect the way you do your product, so the way I can share some stuff that my friends has done on micro influencer stuff. So they do find people who can make amazing content on TikTok, for example, and they don't have to have followers at all because of the unique TikTok algorithm. You don't have to have crazy amount of followers, and your video still might be picked up. So for example, remember the story that I told you about this one crazy viral video that sold out stock for two months? I think the girl who did that video had like 9 followers, and the video got more than 10 million views. So that's the beauty of TikTok. So they've assembled the whole team, I think of 4 to 5 people full time, who would then go and find people who can make those videos for a very affordable price. Like anywhere, think of anywhere from $200 to $500 US per video.
Right.
And they would pay, and they would go to micro influencers, as I said, anywhere from 10 to 100K, and then just do that. I know it's hard to track, but the beauty is that once you have like a big enough social, almost like a kind of a cultural shift that this becomes a thing. I don't know if you noticed, but a couple of months ago, there was a massive trend on TikTok on how young people use Notion, and using Notion to organize your life has become a cool thing to do. And everybody was sharing how they customize this and customize that and their templates. And I love when people create something that becomes almost a part of culture. You know, it becomes a cool thing. Like one of the biggest examples of how something can become a culture that I have highest admiration is, of course, F1 racing, how they've become a part of culture and it changed everything. Second would be, there was this Netflix show about the chess. I forgot the name of it.
The Queen's Gambit.
Yes, exactly, right? And I don't know if you've seen what has that show has done to sales of the chess boards across the world. They were sold out.
And I think I'm not sure if it's chess.com, but one of those like places where they got scores and they compete against each other also, I think, got tremendous influx in popularity as well. Because you're saying it's a long, complicated game. You're taking all these different pieces and components to get there.
So what I'm personally fascinated with is kind of building a product that resonates with the times, right? It's called almost like the Zeitgeist product fit. Like it resonates with the wind of time. What is in the air? I'm not saying that we should just follow all the trends. No, but being able to create a trend, being able to create that kind of cultural shift, that's my personal aspiration. We've been very lucky in a way with the trend of apps back in the day. I think that there is an evolution already.
Okay, so I've got a couple of questions. I wanted to dig back into the sort of underdog story that Kiemen and I both, neither of us are from Poland, but we're both Polish citizens. And, you know, there was a time when Poland was the underdog. And obviously, you know, Ukrainian brothers showing up in the States. I'm curious about whether you felt that it was an advantage to sort of like coming from Odessa. It's sort of you don't have the same privileges, so to see you're sort of hardwired to try harder. So that's like one question. The second one's about the relevance of things like TikTok to business marketing, which is a completely separate question. But so
Richard, let me advise, just maybe one question at a time.
Okay, so yeah, let's just like, did you consciously feel that you and as a Ukrainian guys were like, it was an advantage that you came up. Off the grid into this American thing, or were Ukrainians quite well established in the American ecosystem? So you just ignored it.
So I'll be very honest, Richard, I didn't think about that. I was so curious on what we're doing and I loved it so much that I think this curiosity and love and fire in my eyes that opened so many doors. Because, and especially, I think the Silicon Valley is a unique place, as I'm sure you both know. And when you have somebody new and fresh coming in Silicon Valley, then you have this kind of extra credits for being new and interesting. So I wasn't thinking about, oh, are we the underdog? Oh, how's my accent? Like, or things like that. I was so into what we're doing, and I was so eager to show the world hey, like, we've got this amazing app, you should check this out. And I had to be very creative on how do I reach out to people, but also I realized that, like, and I have some strict rules on what I believe on how the relationship should go, and I can share those, of course, and I think it's very helpful for the people who are just starting.
Sure, go ahead, go for it.
Yeah, so first of all, I always approach relationships as not something that I get myself, but I'm trying to give to a person. Let's go back to things, just a good example. When I was approaching journalists and media guys on kind of how can they write about us. So the best way is to understand what are they looking for? Like, right, I'm trying to be helpful. I'm trying to provide details. Maybe they need some information about the new rules of the App Store. Maybe they've been writing about this topic that I know something about that I can just contribute. So I build a relationship by contributing to their work and making their work better and sometimes easier for them, like kind of giving them feedback and data and opinions that which they valued. And only after that, I can ask something, hey, we're launching this new product. How about you check this out? And this is why it's amazing. Here is the demo. And that really worked. And I think that comes into every relationship. And almost I when I now brief some of the PR folks that do that at Riedel, I say, hey, if you do 95% of their work, and so they can just like almost rely, like stand on your shoulders and make it easy for them. So but make it easy for people to do their job and to like to be great. And it's not just in PR, it's everywhere. It's that principle. So
be helpful. Be helpful, right?
Be helpful. Like, oh, okay. It does require your rigor and dedication and understanding of the context, of course. But I think what was good for me personally and for us is that coming from, as in kind of the underdog, we were not, like, we did not have a lot of resources. So I had to be very creative. How do we get New York Times, or like, how do we get hired this person? How do we achieve our goals? Not in ways that we would approach have we had, for example, the money, or like the easiest examples. I'm just keep coming back to PR because it's very easy, to understand what I mean. We didn't hire an agency that we paid £20,000 per month's retainer to do something for us. No, like, and we didn't have this money, and then we had to be creative and that also happened to be that journalists and media, they love talking to founders. They love talking to people who make decisions. And here we are, and it was easier. So I think we had to find ways how to create better products, better business, and overcome constraints with less resources. And that's an amazing skill to have for everybody.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Definitely. I mean, and but you're not a typical, you can say you're a typical, but you're not a typical guy. I mean, you're just, you just went there and you did it's nice the way you say it. It sounds so easy. I am taking away for people listening though. I mean, that you shouldn't feel like Richard asked it and sort of contextualized it as the underdog, but like you shouldn't care about that. You should just be passionate about what you're doing.
So I think that's a very important point, especially to young entrepreneurs. One of my friends, like a couple of years ago, told me, like, Dennis, I was so amazed on how you could just confidently walk into the room full of billionaires who like building the biggest companies in the world and be almost like on the same level talking to them, even though like you're not, like your company is not as big, you're not as well known. He's like, I would be shy and I would be confused and conflicted. I don't know. I never have the thoughts. I was always curious. Like, yeah, oh,
they're
that's
people.
So
I mean, they're all people. I agree with you, but it's interesting because it's not typical. I don't.
Were you always like that? I mean, you came back. You were always interested in marketing. Like when you were 10, you were 12. You were self confident. And was that your upbringing, or is your brother like that too? Was that your genetics? Or
we're pretty different. We're pretty different. Even though like we have the same parents, and we're grown in the same, like raised in the same family. We are very different. And I think that's the personality trait that came out to be very, very early on in my life. And I'm thankful for my parents. I was trying to kind of decompose, like, how did it happen that I have, that I was just confident. I think it's just a mix of everything. I think that's, I think being curious about something. So I love this phrase. I love this quote. So the most interesting people are not trying to be interesting. They are so interested in something. And because of this interest, they are being interesting to others. When you something.
That's the thing. And actually in sales, like whatever, you may have been doing sales, we're all doing sales one way or another. I know you don't like the word, but the truth is that's actually just caring about the thing. It truly caring about the thing. It's huge. It's like people want to buy if you care, actually. It's amazing how much that works, actually.
And there's another point I'd make, that if someone's listening to this and they're feeling sort of a little sad because I think, well, Dennis is like that and he did really well and I'm not like that. The thing to remember is you don't have to be like that. You just have to have someone in your team who's got that characteristic that you said you're a bit different from your brother. So obviously you had can you talk a bit about how far you put the success of the company towards like a few key people, or was it the culture, or was it obviously you and your brother were different and having family is always very unique, but you mentioned four founders. Did you feel that you managed to create a system to attract good people into the business as well?
Yes, but then it doesn't mean that we didn't have challenges as we grew. Right now we're about 250 people, right? And then it was, at the beginning, it was just very easy to attract people who care, who love what they do. And it's absolutely fine, as you said, to be different. Somebody is a great engineer and I don't know nothing about engineering. I mean, I know some basics, but I cannot be a great engineer. And that's fine, right? And that's the beauty of the team. So we did grow organically as a team. And we had, I think we have a unique culture where very flat, super flat. Cool ideas win. Focusing on like crazy focus on the user and trying to understand how to make things easier. I know these are all cliche and everybody says that, but you have to live that. So just this curiosity. Okay, there is iPad coming. We've heard rumors about iPad coming, and we don't know what size. So what we've done, we've took like we designed ourselves, we took our sisters and we like took cardboard and we almost like made like three different sizes of iPads that we think will have the size. And we started sketching with a pencil, the user interface and the user scenarios on those cardboards with our pencil before the iPad came about. So that's just that curiosity. And that was across the whole team. And our CTO and co-founder, Andrian, is a phenomenal engineer. I don't want to use cliches, but those kind of 10x engineers that people talk about, he was just that, right? Igor understands how business works and took care of everything that relates to finance, hiring, legal. And that gave me an ability to not think about that and do what I'm good at, is understanding, okay, how do we, like, what are we selling? Who are we selling to? How do we tell the world? And that just takes, and it was very organic. And so the company grew with that culture. I think every company goes through stages, and we are as well. So with growth, there comes a lot of things and challenges that we have to overcome. I wouldn't say that we are like, we're scoring A pluses in all of those. Even now we're learning, and with more people, of course, you have to have processes, kind of basic stuff, right? Processes. And the culture is not that apparent as before you just walk into the office, or before they have, we had an office, we had a four bedroom apartment. You walk in there, you see everybody, you understand what's up. But now, especially with the pandemic, like think about the complexity of the onboarding and giving the gist of culture to the new person. And therefore we have to formalize a lot of things. We have to think about, okay, how do we talk about our culture? Because before you just feel it, right? And you either fit or you don't. And now it's there is more complexity, way more complexity. That's why right now we're looking for head of like VP of talent. So to kind of to right now we have to think about being very explicit on do's and don'ts, what we are.
Oh my God, HR, I know all about that. It's such a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
I hate
it. that's as I say, I'm very open, not just wins, but also some challenges. That's one of the challenges for sure.
What I have to ask, because I'm just now really curious, like, so where are you, where are these 300? Like, so are you remote based? Because you talked about how the challenges with the remote culture. Was this all based in Odessa, or where are you guys?
Like, historically,
where are the 300 people?
Historically, it's 250. Historically, the HQ was in Odessa. As we grew, we realized that Kyiv is an amazing source of talent, and it's capital and more people. And so we opened office there. And then very early on, we realized that, okay, we're a global player. We have to sell globally. That's why Igor, our CEO, he's made this decision back in 2011 that we will be spending money on our trips to the US, on our trips to London. The people who make decisions have to be exposed to cultures. So that's how, we were going to all the conferences there. We've opened actually a Berlin office, and then we've opened this platform, this program that allowed people to go and live in Berlin for months and just be there, be in that, go to the office and we work, and then kind of see the culture. We've opened we've opened also the office in Silicon Valley. We shut that down some time ago, but we were always like trying like to say, hey, you cannot just be sitting in one place and understand the culture.
So, just for people listening, this is May 2022. There is a war going on in Ukraine at the moment. How is that? Like, I can't even imagine how, like, so you're mostly still in Ukraine. I mean, most of the people are.
No. Right now we're scattered across 27 countries.
Okay.
And we're building hubs in Berlin, Lisbon. I think London office is coming up. We have a Dubai presence as well. So
you're not that exposed to you have not been that exposed. This is not from a business perspective. Obviously, I'm sure personally this is terrible, but from a business perspective.
Before the war, the majority of the retail team was in Ukraine. So we were very exposed.
Wow. Yeah. So you guys have been through, but we're talking 3 months. I mean, you guys have been through a crazy,
crazy period of time. And this whole situation is very hard for everybody. Right now where the team has done a lot to help through various campaigns those who are in need. We're lucky and privileged, lucky that our business is not that affected, because our user base and customers are across the world, and I'd say about 35-40% are in the US, and then 25-30% are in Europe. So the business is stable. It's safe because all our servers are secure with the Amazons and Googles in Europe and the US. But then just helping people in need and organizing the logistics, you can just only begin to imagine.
I cannot even begin to imagine that. Okay, just to shift maybe, because we're running out of time. You're doing something new, and I want to hear I'm sure we all want to hear what you're doing. You're setting up a new business, you said.
As well as what it is, what the motivation is, because you said you were non-executive, so maybe you didn't like being, obviously you made a change. So like, why did you quit? You tried to quit, but you're still actually working.
Yeah, that's true. A couple of things. I've been in this position for about 10 to 11 years. And I realized that I want to be a serial entrepreneur. I want to start new businesses and I want to build great businesses. And then because I'm so curious about life, there's so many things to build, so many things to do. And that's one. Number two, at that stage, remember how I told you that we didn't do performance marketing and I had no experience in doing that. My strengths are in something else. So I've made a decision, okay, if we want to focus on actually ramping up our scale stage, we need somebody who has done it. So that's why one of the reasons I stepped down, I said, hey, like we need somebody who has experience in this. And if that can affect the business in more meaningful ways, this should happen. And I think that's great when people have no ego. And then they just care about building a great business, right? So a couple of things allowed me to make the decision, and then I took a couple of months off not doing something that was very unusual, and I failed on my sabbatical as I joke around. So I was hoping for like 6 months, but then I spent like 2 months of. It's not even sabbatical. It's just kind of reading books and kind of reflecting on things. And then I've been building productivity apps for 10 years. And I love all the things about productivity and efficiency and optimization. The end goal is just to be, is just to live an amazing life. So one of my when people ask me, what do I want? I say, hey, I want to live. Out of all the options that I can live my life, I want to live an amazing life that I'm happy about. And so based on that, I started like kind of this research as a hobby, like kind of a pet project that's called My Life. And the idea is that to explore whether we can build a life operating dashboard, a life dashboard for someone. I mean, I'm building this for myself. And kind of because there are so many things happening in life for all of us. And for me, it's crazy that think about the company. The company usually has a vision, a mission, your KPIs and OKRs, and kind of performance management systems. And we as humans, like many of us don't. And I said, okay, I want to have more clarity onto what I'm doing, where's my focus on, and how can I achieve things faster, better.
My life.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's just for now, it's passion project, complete hobby for now, but I'm exploring and talking to a lot of people, doing interviews, trying to understand how do people approach goal setting organization. It started simple. It started from simple like goal setting for a year, right? That people have. Think of like New Year's resolutions on steroids. And then it evolved because I have kind of this, I'm exposed to technology. And I said, okay, can we build something? Can technology help us to basically stay on track and connect our bigger goals and vision, what we want to achieve with everyday tasks that we kind of do every day in our calendar? And the short answer, I've got some ruthless feedback. People told me, Dennis, this is like way over engineered. And whether it's like, everybody loves the idea, but actually doing that requires a lot of time and commitment. And people don't always have that. It's funny how people usually plan their holiday more like better than their life, but that's just a different topic. So there's one that's pure hobby, and there's another one, the new company that my friend got me in, and I'm co-founded already. We're building, surprisingly enough, we're building a platform to sell your luxury watch. So that would be the platform that allows you to sell your luxury watch.
That's a very targeted market, I guess.
Sorry?
that's a very targeted market. You must have done the, you know what the demographic is. I mean, it must be a very specific, the luxury watch, whatever, resell sector. That's what it is, right? It's luxury watches. I mean,
I was surprised. I didn't know much about this industry, but again, being curious about all the things, it's $25 billion a year.
Exactly. That's what I was wondering. I love that.
And that's hilarious. That's the secondary market. That's not the official dealers that they sell on, brand new. That's like the kind of resale. But that's huge. And the product, I was assembled a team. Product is ready. And this week, next week, we will be doing soft launch. So super excited about that.
Cool. Very cool. Well,
We obviously, you're a very busy guy. Do please, we will share, if you send us a batch of links, and we'll share everything in the show notes that go out with the podcast. Just before we wrap, is there anything that you haven't shared? And I think you've done an incredible job of getting across a really attractive, interesting, inspiring story. And I hope someone somewhere can, I'm sure many people can even just pick up one thing from your story. That would be great. But is there anything you haven't shared with us and our listeners that you also think is important that you'd like to get out there just before we wrap?
Yeah, I didn't share that. I would love to get some feedback on the idea of my life, because this is still a beta. So whoever loves the idea of kind of organizing life and living more, having more clarity, and how can we connect kind of higher goals with like everyday tasks, all ideas are welcome.
I'm actually personally very interested in that. I'm one of these like productivity type optimizer.
We should jump on a call.
I have I really got into this thing and all that stuff, and that's just one piece. And I think that this is just the health piece, and I'm sure there's a lot of other.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I'm pointing to this. If you're on the podcast, I'm pointing to my Apple Watch. Just
I'll tell a couple of stories I don't normally tell about Kimon, that we've been doing business for 20 years. And one of our early deals, I invested in a company that he started. And I just remember at like 9:01, 5 months after the deal, Kimon rang and said, "Richard, you owe me 40,000 zloty." And it was like, it was in his calendar. And then like in August, we were in some meeting and the reminder popped up in his diary, which was, "Get my boiler serviced, like my heating system serviced for the winter." So of course I did in August. There's never a queue. You know, you just get it done. It's easy. You wait till October like everyone else does. And it's, you know, just these little things to do with that. Kim's extremely well organized. And I think he will.
No, but I'm into the life thing. I'm into the life. I like the life aspect of it. And then are there some kind of algorithms or things that can help us sort of, and then what you said is, I have big goals and how do I break them down into little goals? Just fundamentally, it's a great idea. I have no idea how you would do it, but whatever. I'd be happy to talk to you about it.
No, I'm happy. Let's just probably organize a call next week or when you have time, and I'll show it. And I just want to say, everybody, thank you so much for listening. And hopefully some of it was useful and interesting. I'm very open. You can find me on socials and Twitter. And if I can be somehow helpful doing intro or like introing you to investors or potential colleagues or co-founders or anything, just feel free to reach out.
Cool. All right, thanks Dennis for your time, and thank you to the viewers who took the time to listen to us, and obviously thanks to all the people that help us with this podcast. We've got engineers and people behind the scene making sound and video, and of course the MBN, which distributes this. So thanks everybody. If you like this, follow on social, on wherever you listen to podcasts, like, subscribe, comment. Adios, everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye-bye. Bye.